Chapter 11. With his 2 pieces of silver, Wang Lung paid for 100 miles of road, and the officer who took his silver from him gave him back a handful of copper pence. And with a few of these, Wang Lung bought from a vendor who thrust his tray of wares in at a hole in the wagon as soon as it stopped, 4 small loaves of bread and a bowl of soft rice for the girl. It was more than they had to eat at one time for many days, and although they were starved for food, when it was in their mouths, desire left them, and it was only by coaxing that the boys could be made to swallow. But the old man sucked perseveringly at the bread between his toothless gums. "One must eat," he cackled forth, very friendly to all who pressed about him as the fire wagon rolled and rocked on its way. "I do not care that my foolish belly is growing lazy after all these days of little to do. It must be fed. I will not die because it doesn't wish to work." And men laughed suddenly at the smiling, wizened little old man, whose sparse white beard was scattered all over his chin. But not all the copper pence did Wang Lung spend on food. He kept back all he was able, to buy mats, to build a shed for them when they reached the south. There were men and women in the fire wagon who had been south in other years, some who went each year to the rich cities of the south to work and to beg and thus save the price of food. And Wang Lung, when he had grown used to the wonder of where he was and to the astonishment of seeing the land whirl by the holes in the wagon, listened to what these men said. They spoke with the loudness of wisdom where others are ignorant.
"First you must buy 6 mats, said one, a man with coarse, hanging lips like a camel's mouth.
"These are 2 pence for 1 mat, if you are wise and don't act like a country bumpkin, in which case you will be charged 3 pence, which is more than is necessary, as I very well know.
I can't be fooled by the men in the southern cities, even if they are rich."
He wagged his head and looked about for admiration. Wang Lung listened anxiously. "And then?" he urged. He sat squatting upon his haunches on the bottom of the wagon, which was, after all, only an empty room made of wood and with nothing to sit upon, and the wind and the dust flying up through the cracks in the floor.
"Then," said the man more loudly still, raising his voice above the din of the iron wheels beneath him, "then you bind these together into a hut, and then you go out to beg, first smearing yourself with mud and filth to make yourselves as piteous as you can."
Now Wang Lung had never in his life begged of any man, and he disliked this notion of begging of strange people in the south.
"One must beg?" he repeated.
"Ah, indeed," said the coarse-mouthed man. "But not until you have eaten. These people in the south have so much rice that each morning you may go to a public kitchen and for a penny hold as much as you can in your belly of the white rice gruel. Then you can beg comfortably and buy bean curd and cabbage and garlic."
Wang Lung withdrew a little from the others and turned himself about to the wall, and secretly, with his hand in his girdle, he counted out the pence he had left. There was enough for the 6 mats, and enough each for a penny for rice, and beyond that he had 3 pence left. It came over him with comfort that thus they could begin the new life. But the notion of holding up a bowl and begging of anyone who passed continued to distress him. It was very well for the old man and for the children and even for the women. But he had his 2 hands.
"Is there no work for a man's hands?" he asked of the man suddenly, turning about.
"Aye, work," said the man with contempt, and he spat upon the floor. "You can pull a rich man in a yellow rickshaw if you like, and sweat your blood out with heat as you run, and have your sweat freeze into a coat of ice on you when you stand waiting to be called. Give me begging."
And he cursed a round curse, so that Wang Lung would not ask anything of him further. But still it was a good thing that he had heard what the man said. For when the fire wagon had carried them as far as it would, and had turned them out upon the ground, Wang Lung had ready a plan, and he set the old man and the children against a long gray wall of a house which stood there, and he told the woman to watch them, and he went off to buy the mats, asking of this one and that where the market streets lay. At first he could scarcely understand what was said to him, so brittle and sharp was the sound which these southerners made when they spoke. And several times when he asked, and they didn't understand, they were impatient. And he learned to observe what sort of man he asked of, and to choose one with a kindlier face, for these southerners had tempers which were quick and easily ruffled. But he found the mat shop at last on the edge of the city, and he put his pennies down upon the counter as one who knew the price of the goods, and he carried away his roll of mats. When he returned to the spot where he had left the others, they stood there waiting, although when he came the boys cried out at him in relief, and he saw that they had been filled with terror in this strange place. Only the old man watched everything with pleasure and astonishment, and he murmured at Wang Lung, "You see how fat they all are, these southerners, and how pale and oily are their skins. They eat pork every day, doubtless." But none who passed looked at Wang Lung and his family. Men came and went along the cobbled highway to the city, busy and intent, and never glancing aside at beggars. And every little while a caravan of donkeys came pattering by, their small feet fitting neatly to the stones, and they were laden with baskets of brick for the building of houses, and with great bags of grain crossed upon their swaying backs. At the end of each caravan the driver rode on the hindermost beast, and he carried a great whip, and this whip he cracked with a terrific noise over the backs of the beasts, shouting as he did so. And as he passed Wang Lung, each driver gave him a scornful and haughty look, and no prince could have looked more haughty than these drivers in their rough work coats as they passed by the small group of persons standing wondering at the edge of the roadway. It was the especial pleasure of each driver, seeing how strange Wang Lung and his family were, to crack his whip just as he passed them. And the sharp, explosive cut of the air made them leap up, and seeing them leap, the drivers guffawed. And Wang Lung was angry when this happened 2 and 3 times, and he turned away to see where he could put his hut. There were already other huts clinging to the wall behind them, but what was inside the wall none knew, and there was no way of knowing. It stretched out long and gray and very high, and against the base the small mat sheds clung like fleas to a dog's back. Wang Lung observed the huts, and he began to shape his own mats this way and that, but they were stiff and clumsy things at best, being made of split reeds. And he despaired when suddenly Olan said, "That I can do. I remember it in my childhood." And she placed the girl upon the ground, and pulled the mats thus and thus, and shaped a rounded roof, reaching to the ground, and high enough for a man to sit under, and not strike the top. And upon the edges of the mats that were upon the ground, she placed bricks that were lying about, and she sent the boys to picking up more bricks. When it was finished, they went within, and with one mat she had contrived not to use, they made a floor, and sat down, and were sheltered. Sitting thus and looking at each other, it seemed less than possible that the day before they had left their own house and their land, and that these were now 100 miles away. It was a distance vast enough to have taken them weeks of walking, and at which they must have died, some of them, before it was done. Then the general feeling of plenty in this rich land, where no one seemed even hungered, filled them, and when Wang Lung said, "Let us go and seek the public kitchens," they rose up almost cheerfully and went out once more. And this time the small boys clattered their chopsticks against their bowls as they walked, for there would soon be something to put into them. And they found soon why the huts were built to that long wall. For a short distance beyond the northern end of it was a street, and along the street many people walked carrying bowls and buckets and vessels of tin, all empty. and these persons were going to the kitchens for the poor, which were at the end of the street and not far away. And so Wang Lung and his family mingled with these others, and with them they came at last to two great buildings made of mats, and everyone crowded into the open end of these buildings. Now in the rear of each building were earthen stoves, but larger than Wang Lung had ever seen, and on them iron cauldrons as big as small ponds. And when the great wooden lids were pried up, there was the good white rice bubbling and boiling, and clouds of fragrant steam rose up. Now when the people smelled this fragrance of rice, it was the sweetest in the world to their nostrils. And they all pressed forward in a great mass, and people called out, and mothers shouted in anger and fear, lest their children be trodden upon, and little babies cried, and the men who opened the cauldrons roared forth, "Now there is enough for every man, and each in his turn." But nothing could stop the mass of hungry men and women, and they fought like beasts until all were fed. Wang Lung, caught in their midst, could do nothing but cling to his father and his two sons, and when he was swept to the great cauldron, he held out his bowl, and when it was filled, threw down his pence, and it was all he could do to stand sturdily and not be swept on before the thing was done. Then when they had come to the street again and stood eating their rice, he ate and was filled, and there was a little left in his bowl, and he said, "I will take this home to eat in the evening." But a man stood near who was some sort of a guard of the place, for he wore a special garment of blue and red, and he said sharply, "No, and you can take nothing away except what is in your belly." And Wang Lung marveled at this and said, "Well, if I have paid my penny, what business is it of yours if I carry it within or without me?" The man said then, "We must have this rule, for there are those whose hearts are so hard that they will come and buy this rice that is given for the poor, for a penny will not feed any man like this, and they will carry the rice home to feed to their pigs for slop, and the rice is for men and not for pigs." Wang Lung listened to this in astonishment, and he cried, "Are there men as hard as this?" And then he said, "But why should any give like this to the poor, and who is it that gives?" The man answered then, "It is the rich and the gentry of the town who do it, and some do it for a good deed for the future, that by saving lives they may get merit in heaven, and some do it for righteousness, that men may speak well of them. Nevertheless, it is a good deed for whatever reason," said Wang Lung, "and some must do it out of a good heart." And then seeing that the man didn't answer him, he added in his own defense, "At least there are a few of these?" But the man was weary of speaking with him, and he turned his back and he hummed an idle tune. The children tugged at Wang Lung then, and Wang Lung led them all back to the hut they had made, and there they laid themselves down, and they slept until the next morning, for it was the first time since summer they had been filled with food, and sleep overcame them with fullness.
This ends Disc 3.